Yes, so I'll try and take slightly less than half the time. I'll be talking about the first part of this, the extracting conformal data from critical quantum spin chains part, and Etienne's part is a natural continuation of this. So I'm a postdoc at PI for anyone who doesn't know me, and Etienne is a grad student, and without further ado, let's begin. So throughout this slide, throughout this presentation, we'll be abusing the x-axis slightly in order to show degeneracies. We'll just split points a little bit apart in the x direction. It's okay because everything is quantized in that direction throughout the plots, just so that you can see the degeneracies a little bit better. So the setting here is critical quantum spin chains. So it's some Hamiltonian that you can write as a sum of local terms, and we're considering a circle topology. And under the RG, these systems that we're interested in will flow to some 1+1 dimensional conformal field theory. And the conformal field theory can be specified via its conformal data, which are a few numbers that pin down the CFT. So we've got the central charge C, some scaling dimensions and conformal spins of some particular fields, scaling operators in the CFT called the primary fields. And we've got the so-called OPE coefficients, which are related to the three-point correlators of the primary fields. Now, since many different spin chains and other models will flow to the same 1+1 dimensional CFT, the CFT can be thought of as a characterization of a universality class. And it's a common problem in condensed matter physics to get from some microscopic description of a model to some characterization of the universality class, in this case, the CFT. So how do you do that? So I'll talk about ways to do this in part one of this talk. So we start with a critical quantum spin chain Hamiltonian. We obtain some low energy eigenstates somehow, doesn't really matter how, and also some operators called, which we'll call lattice Virasoro generators for reasons that will become clear. And using a combination of these numerically obtained states and these operators that we construct from the critical spin chain Hamiltonian, we can extract a complete set of the conformal data. So I'll also mention briefly how to make sure you extract accurate conformal data by going to large system sizes using periodic uniform matrix product states. So the CFT, for sake of an example, that we'll be considering is, of course, the 1+1D Ising CFT. And the central charge in this case is a half, as I'm sure many of you know. And this is a plot of the scaling operators according to their conformal spin and their scaling dimension. These are the lowest lying scaling operators with the lowest conformal dimensions. And you can see that the spectrum of operators is split into towers. This is indicated by color in this plot. And at the base of each of these towers, there's a so-called primary operator. This is the primary field that I mentioned before. So the primary fields in the Ising CFT are the denoted identity for the lowest lying one, sigma and epsilon. The scaling dimensions are very simple, 0, 1 eighth, and 1, and the conformal spins are all 0. It's a particular example, but what I'm going to describe works for a generic critical spin chain, no matter what CFT you have behind it, in principle at least. Oh, and I forgot to mention, yes, there is only one non-trivial OPE coefficient. It's equal to 1/2 in this case. And it's just the fusion of two sigma operators to an epsilon. OK, so it's known that if you put the CFT, now this is still on the CFT side, not considering the lattice model. If you put the CFT on a circle, then the spectrum of the Hamiltonian of the CFT looks exactly the same as the spectrum of conformal scaling operators that I showed you on the previous slide. And so the precise relation is that the energies are equal to 2 pi over L, where L is the length of the circle, times the scaling dimension minus the central charge over 12. And the momenta, the angular momenta around the circle, are just almost equal to the scaling, the conformal spins. And it's pretty well known since the mid-80s that if you take a critical spin chain on the lattice and put it on a circle, then the low energy spectrum, of the Hamiltonian looks very similar to the low energy part of the spectrum of the CFT Hamiltonian. And this can be used to extract some data. if you look at how the energies look on the lattice, it's almost the same as in the CFT. You have some additional non-universal constants, A and B, and you have some corrections which scale away, which become smaller with increasing system size in a, with some non-universal exponent x. That's for some dominant contribution. And the angular momenta are just the same in this case. So this was discovered in the mid-80s and has been used heavily since to identify lattice models with CFTs. So here's a summary of what you can get from the low energy spectrum of the lattice. You can get the central charge from this term here, and you can get some scaling dimensions and conformal spins. But one thing you don't know is which of those conformal spins and scaling dimensions, or equivalently, which of these low energy states corresponds to a primary field or a primary operator. So how to identify these states with primary operators is something I'm going to tell you a method for in the next slides. So the way we want to do this is we want to look at another part of the structure of the CFT Hilbert space. There are some operators which act on the same Hilbert space as the CFT Hamiltonian on the circle, and they are the Virasoro generators, and they act on the energy eigenstates of the CFT as ladder operators. So they just take you up and down in energy and left and right in angular momentum. And they only take you up and down and left and right within a single conformal tower of states. So if you start, for example, at a primary state, you can go up and discover all the states in the same conformal tower, but you'll never get a state in a different conformal tower. And so they can be used to distinguish primary states because the primary states are the ones that are never lowered in energy by any of the ladder operators, because simply because they're at the base of the towers. So if we had a lattice version of these Virasoro generators, then we could use them to distinguish the lattice primary states from the other states on the lattice. And indeed, there are operators which fill this role. So this operator Hn is simply the lattice Hamiltonian, but instead of just a sum over Hj, I put a little phase in here. So it's essentially a Fourier mode of the energy density from the original lattice Hamiltonian. And it turns out that these act as if they were a linear combination of these ladder operators, one from one chiral copy of the Virasoro algebra, one from the other, for those who understand what that means. And you can use these to distinguish primary states on the lattice. These operators were first looked at by Ku and Hubert Salleur in the 90s for some integrable models and have been used since in the integrable community. We've been applying them and showing that they work for other spin models, generic spin models, and that they can be used to systematically extract conformal data, in particular the identification of the primary states. So here's an example of how this works. We take some state chosen from the low energy set of states that we've obtained numerically. We hit them with some operator. This combination of Hn operators is enough to take you, if you apply it enough, anywhere in the conformal tower, up or down. And so we pick an operator, pick a state to act on, and we act on it, and we find which non-zero matrix elements we have with the other low energy states in the spectrum. So these green blobs show we have some non-zero matrix elements with states of higher energy than the original states, and these red blobs show we have non-zero matrix elements with lower energy states. Because we have non-zero matrix elements with these lower energy states, this cannot be a primary state, not a primary. Alternatively, we could have started with this state, in which case we would have found only overlap with higher energy states, so we identify this state as a primary state. And in general, this initial state that was a primary state needn't have been down here. It could have been up here, and we would have still obtained no overlap with lower energy states and identified it as a primary state. So we started with just the low energy spectrum. From that, we could get the central charge. But if we use these Hn operators and look at their matrix elements in this low energy space, we can first identify all the primary states and also, incidentally, identify all the descendant states on the lattice with their corresponding conformal towers. And because we know the primary states, we also know now the scaling dimensions and spins of the primary states. of the primary fields. Okay, but there's a piece missing still. We still would like to get the OPE coefficients. So how do we do that? So this is the relation we'd like to use to do that. So in the CFT, one can formulate the OPE coefficients in terms of eigenstates of the CFT Hamiltonian on the circle, phi 1 and phi 3. These are eigenstates corresponding to primary operators, so you could call them primary states. And then you take an operator, a primary field operator, and you sandwich it in between. This is equivalent to taking a three-point correlator on the vacuum of these three fields, and it gives you an OPE coefficient. Now, we'd like to do the same thing on the lattice, and because of our identification of the primary states, we have phi 1 and phi 3 on the lattice. But we don't have phi 2. We don't know what the lattice operator would be that would correspond to this field operator in the CFT. In general, we don't know this. So we'd like to get an equivalent of the primary field operators on the lattice. And what we do to achieve this is variationally optimize some over some ansatz for local operators. So we take some ansatz for local operators, let's say a basis for nearest neighbor operators on the spin chain, and we optimize the parameters in that basis variationally by requiring that the matrix elements, that certain matrix elements of the operator correspond to their or are close to their CFT counterparts. So in the CFT, if you apply this primary field operator to the vacuum state, then you get certain numbers, certain overlaps, certain non-zero matrix elements with some descendant states. And you have certain zero matrix elements with other descendant states. And what we'd like to do is just require that our lattice operator, when applied to the vacuum on the lattice, has matrix elements that are close. Yes?
Can I just ask one question about that? So there's a bunch of also other equalities which are zero you're setting. You just sort of like count the number of constraints. How does it scale with, in general, an operator is an n by n thing? Is there n squared of these constraints? Or
right. So the number of constraints depends on how many low energy states you have, and in particular, how many low energy states in the conformal tower of the primary you're looking for you have. So it's easy to write down what these matrix elements should be, especially for derivative descendant states. So if you have a whole bunch of those in your low energy spectrum, then you can put quite a few constraints on this ansatz. And the more states you have, the more constraints you can put on.
Are they all matrix elements with a vacuum, or some of them are non-trivial on both
sides? We're choosing only to use matrix elements with the vacuum because we always know where the vacuum state is, and we can compute those without referring to another primary field. Mm-hmm. But in general, if you already had, for example, a primary operator for another field, you could, and you knew the OPE coefficient for one combination, you could extend this cost function. But we find that in practice, it's enough to look at the vacuum.
So the reason this works is because you don't optimize over all operators.
Right,
through the end of local ones.
Local ones. So in fact, this operator here is another Fourier mode of some local operator phi j. And there's some range that we set as a parameter. And often, you know, typically for the models we've looked at, it's enough for the range to be 1, 2, or 3 sites in order to get a good scaling of the accuracy with the system size of the OPE coefficient. Okay. So talking of accuracy, if we do this, we can produce lattice operators, it turns out, for the primary fields in the Ising model and get an accuracy of order 10 to the minus 7 for the OPE coefficients by doing a finite size scaling analysis on moderate system sizes. And Ijen has looked at doing this on other models as well, and he's going to tell you a little bit about doing this in the context of supersymmetry in the next part of the talk. Okay. So what have we got now? We had the low energy spectrum. This gave us the central charge and some scaling dimensions. Together with these lattice Virasoro generators, we get the primary field dimensions. We also, by the way, get an additional estimate for the central charge from one of the matrix elements of these HN operators, which is nice because it's nice to be able to compare different methods and make sure everything's consistent. And using this method of variationally finding lattice primary operators, we can also get estimates of the OPE coefficients. And again, this is all for a generic critical quantum spin chain, so we didn't need to assume anything about the CFT that we have. Okay, so I just want to briefly mention how to get this level of accuracy. This 10 to the minus 7, for example, was using system sizes which you could not obtain by doing exact diagonalization. So we use matrix product states. We use periodic uniform matrix product states. So matrix product state on a circle, all the tensors are the same. This is the ansatz for the ground state. For excited states, we first find the ground state, and then we variationally optimize excited states using this ansatz where all the tensors but one are the ground state tensors. So this is a Bloch state like ansatz. We take this local perturbation. The locality is really, it's not very confined to a local region because there's a lot of entanglement in this state. It's a critical ground state. And we find that this ansatz captures lots of low energy excitations in critical systems very well. So we can get good estimates for the matrix elements we're interested in. Why would you want to go to larger systems? Well, in some cases, if you stick to small systems, you might misidentify your universality class. For example, here's a critical spin chain where at system size 32, the low energy spectrum looks like this. And if you know your CFT operator spectra, you might think this is a tri-criticalizing model. However, if you use periodic uniform matrix product states, if you use pumps to go to a larger system size of 256 sites, you find that all these guys shift around until it ends up looking a lot more like the Ising CFT again. And this is, in fact, because in this lattice model, we were quite close to a tri-critical point, but not at it. So eventually, the RG takes you back to the Ising CFT. And here's an example of the precision we can reach. So these are finite size extrapolations, one set of conformal data for the Ising model and one for the tri-criticalizing model using a model due to O'Brien and Paul Fenley. And you can see we can get order 10 to the minus 7 accuracy on central charge and scaling dimensions in the Ising model, and order 10 to the minus 4, 5 for the tri-criticalizing model. This one is a little more difficult because we don't know exactly where the tri-critical point is, I should point out, so that limits the accuracy as well. So we find that this works, in summary, very nicely. So the story so far is that we can take a critical spin chain Hamiltonian, we can construct these latticeferous Sora generators and obtain some low energy eigenstates using some method, matrix product states, EDE, whatever you want. And we can use it to extract a complete set of the conformal data for the 1 plus 1 view CFT. And we can do this accurately by going to large system sizes using periodic matrix product states. So so far we only assumed conformal symmetry to be present. That means there's some realization of the Virasoro algebra on the Hilbert space of the CFT. But in general, there might be more symmetry. There might be, for example, supersymmetry, or some U1 current, or some SUN current. So you might have an extended symmetry algebra, as well as the Virasoro part. And we'd like to be able to extract the data about this extended symmetry as well. And that's what Ijan is going to tell you about now. So this is the second part of the talk.
Let's take a couple of questions before we
move on to the
first question.
OK, sure.
You said the critical point in that O'Brien Fenley model is not known exactly, but can you use your method to actually find the critical point by, for example, searching for the parameter value where your central charge is 7/10, for example?
You could do that, certainly. So, I mean,
try that? Is that better than what is known?
Is it better? We didn't try to more finely locate that particular critical point, or did you? No, we didn't try to do that. We have considered using the central charge you can get from this matrix element to better locate critical points. I've done some simple experiments, and it looks like you can use it. I don't know if it's more, if it gets you a better estimate or not at this point. Any other questions? Okay.
So thanks everyone for participating to the last speaker of today. And I hopefully will be the only speaker who will speak about supersymmetry in this condensed matter conference. And hopefully I will convince you that supersymmetry is not only useful in condensed matter physics, but also it, you will see its action on the low energy subspace of some critical quantum spin chains. Okay, so this is the model that Ash has mentioned. The tricritical Ising model. So you start with our favorite friend, the Ising critical point, and then you add with some operators, which for the expert is the TT bar of the Ising model, and you add this this term to some 0.428, which is not not exactly, which because this this model is not exactly integrable on the lattice, so we can only get a numerical estimation of this lambda star, and Okay. So this Hamiltonian, is designed to have both Z2 symmetry and Fram-Swanier duality. And let us apply Ash's method or our method to this Hamiltonian with some moderate system size. And this is the spectrum that we get. And these colors coming from identifying the primary field using the HN operators. And we can see that there are 8 primary fields, but if you are in the perspective of the Virasoro symmetry, then all these 8 primary fields would be independent, and they would generate independent conformal towers. But actually, I will show that this primary field, this primary field may be related to each other. So, for example, this G is some generators which will be which I will show later what this is, and this G would have G and G bar, which could relate these 4 primary fields. So for example, if you start from the epsilon primary field and you act with some G operator just like the Virasoro, it's like the Virasoro generators, and you could reach the psi primary field. So in the sense of these G generators, even though these 4 are both Virasoro primaries, only one of them are a primary field with respect to this extended symmetry. So our task is to find what is this G on the lattice and how will we use this to identify the primary field under this new symmetry. Okay, so just to repeat, what we are concerned about is the emergent extended symmetry to the Virasoro symmetry. So this extended symmetry may provide actual structure that we see in different primary states. For example, in this talk, I will focus on the tricritical Ising model, which we have an emergent supersymmetry, which combined with conformal symmetry, and we call it superconformal. And there are other examples which are prominent, which are present in our some simple models. For example, as Han has talked in his talk, in her talk, for example, the 3-state post model, like we have the W algebra, and for example, the 4-state post model, we have the Kac-Moody algebra, which has an additional conserved current. And this algebra could provide more insights into the conformal spectrum besides the Virasoro symmetry. Okay, so here is our goal. We would like to find lattice generator operators that correspond to generators of this superconformal algebra and identify the superconformal primary state that I've mentioned. Okay, so for those who are not familiar with this, so I will first introduce to you what is the superconformal symmetry, and I will use a specific example of the tricritical Ising CFT. Okay, so superconformal symmetry is an extension of the Virasoro symmetry. So the Virasoro algebra is the subalgebra of the super Virasoro algebra. And let me remind you what the Virasoro algebra is about. It is generated by this T and T bar, which is the stress tensor of this field theory, and it has scaling dimension 2 and conformal spin 2. And we can define the Fourier mode of this. And we get the Virasoro generators, and this is the Virasoro algebra that they should satisfy. And we know that for a supersymmetric theory, whenever you see a boson, here, these two are bosons, you should consider fermions. So here, the super partner of this is we call fermionic stress tensor, and it has scaling dimension 3/2. We can also expand this into Fourier mode, which we call GM, and they satisfy this commutation relation with this LM. And this commutation relation says nothing, but it is a rephrase of this delta equal to 3/2. But the important part is the following. When you act with the super real sort of generators twice, you will get back to the real sort of symmetry. So that is that is the universal feature of the supersymmetry. We are acting on the supersymmetry twice. Acting with the supersymmetry twice, we will get back to the original space-time symmetry. And we should notice that this CFT, this CCFT is the same as this CCFT, and that is a very non-trivial constraint on this super real sort of algebra. Okay. In this talk, I will focus on the Neville's Watt sector, which is this super generator M. GM would only take on half integer values, and this only means that the fermion field would take antiperiodic boundary conditions. And all what I would say later would also apply to the R sector, the Raman sector, where the fermionic field are periodic. Okay, so there are still lowering operators and raising operators like the real sort of algebra. So the raising operators has m smaller than zero, and it increases the scaling dimension by the absolute value of m. And there are lowering operators which is m larger than zero, and they decrease the scaling dimension by m. And we can define the super real sort of primary states that satisfy this four relationship, which means that they cannot be lowered by all these four generators. And of course, it is a subset of Virasoro primary state, because Virasoro primary state only needs to satisfy only two of them. Okay. Yeah, so here is the example that the triangularizing CFT is the first understood supersymmetric CFT. It is done by this man many years ago. It comes near in parallel with the original paper of the conformal field theory. And we know that the central charge is 7 tenths, and this is the spectrum that we have. So as I have said, if you acting on the super real sort of generators, you will start from the epsilon state, you will get all these three. And if you start the identity from the identity state, you will actually get all these three. So in the end, only these two are super real sort of primaries, and all the six, all the other six are not super real sort of primaries. And this put together with super conformal algebra, this puts very strong constraint on this CFT. Okay, so our goal, just let's remind you, is that how we can achieve this on the lattice. Okay. We will focus on this model. And this model is what Han has mentioned, that generates the RG flow from the tricritical point to the Ising model. We will just state at the tricritical point, and we will just look at the spectrum. So we need low energy states in both periodic boundary conditions and antiperiodic boundary conditions to see supersymmetry. That is because supersymmetry needs bosons and fermions, and in the periodic boundary conditions, you can only see bosons, but you cannot see fermions. So the fermions happen to be in the antiperiodic boundary condition. So this is what you get. I also have shown this in the first slide, this four conformal towers is what you get from the periodic boundary sector, and these four are what you get from the antiperiodic sector, and they both generate conformal towers. And as you can see, that our numerical diagonalization method at this large size produce nearly the same as the CFT spectrum. So we can obtain all the energy eigenstates. So we are using some kind of matrix product state algorithm. Okay, so this is the central part of my talk. We want to know what this is. So this TF, we want to construct this as a lattice operator, so it has some set label J. And we know that it is a fermion, and fermions in 1 plus 1 dimensions is nothing but the string operator. It is non-local with respect to the bosonic operators. So what this string operator is about is that you start from your starting point of the spin chain, and you attach a bunch of string of z, sigma z, and then you attach a local operator to this string operator. And this, in my notation, I call it SO. And here, and then we make an ansatz of the fermionic stress tensor. And the reason that we make use this ansatz is that they are both, the first thing is that they are both string operators, so they are fermions. And the second thing is that we need that it's Z2 symmetry. We have the Z2 symmetry to be odd. That is because it's a single fermion, and single fermion would flip sign under the global spin flip. Okay, so and actually, it turns out that these four, this answer only have three variational parameter is already enough. And actually, you can add more, and it will help. But in the end, we will just get a more accurate representation of this fermionic stress tensor. So to the leading order, this is correct. Okay, so making use the features of the lattice Hamiltonian, it was already proposed what this value should be, and we will not assume these features of the lattice Hamiltonian. We will treat it as the black box. Okay, so let us see how we can compute these variational parameters. So first, the super real solar generator GN is the Fourier mode of this TF with some normalization factor. Of course, this normalization factor cannot be determined by the symmetry. And we ask the following. First, G minus 1/2 would all these three generators would annihilate the ground state. That is, so the first, so the second and the third one is lowering operator, so it must annihilate the ground state. And this one happens also to annihilate the ground state. It's just like the L minus 1 for the expert in the Virasoro symmetry, that which also annihilates the ground state.
So
and
this is the ground state of theoretic boundary?
Yeah. It's the identity. It's the state that corresponding to the identity operator. Okay. Yeah, and we also ask for this condition to fix the normalization of the like this eta, and this is nothing but which we would require in the CFT. Okay, so now we have four conditions, and we have four variational parameters, and we can solve it. And this is the result, and we get roughly like this value because the critical point is also very approximate, so this accuracy is already very amazing, we also get the overall factor here, and we should stress that this approach we are not using any assumptions of the Hamiltonian, unlike you make observation of the Hamiltonian and say that oh this should take on these values.
Mm-hmm. So solve the state you obtain under purity boundary conditions. Solve the state you obtain under anti-purity boundary conditions.
Sorry, can you?
Solve the state you obtain under purity boundary condition. Solve the state you obtain under anti-purity boundary condition.
Yes. Yeah. So the fermions are the anti-periodic ones, and the bosons are the periodic ones. Okay. Okay. So now we have the GN generators, and we would like to see whether this is true or not. So the simplest check is to check whether the central charge is correct. Okay, so remember that in the Virasoro algebra, the commutator of L2 and L-2 would give you the central charge, and this is the expression that if you only have Virasoro symmetry. And for the super Virasoro symmetry, you have the same central charge appearing in the anti-commutator of GNs, and then this is the expression that you would have. And in the thermal dynamic limit, where the super conformal symmetry becomes exact, so you would have the they would tend to the same value, which is the CCFT. Okay, so this is our numerical result that we extrapolate from this system size, and we compute the green line, the red line is the super conformal one, and this is the Virasoro one, and we found that they are both close to 0.7 with similar accuracy. So yeah, so that is so from that we can conclude that our lattice super real solar generator is correct, and let's use this to identify further the super real solar primary state. As I mentioned, so these are not super real solar primary state, and they can be obtained by acting with super real solar generators on other states. So So here, this is this arrow we already used it to extract the central charge in the last slide, and these three that we haven't dealt with. So here we plot the matrix element of these three, and we see that they are all non-zero in the thermodynamic limit. So which means that all these epsilon prime, and this psi are not super real zero primaries. And by acting with G bar, the other anti-Carroll one, you can also see that, for example, this TF bar and psi bar are not super real zero primaries. So in the end, you could identify that only the identity and epsilon are the super real zero primaries. Okay. So this would end my talk. I'll summarize the whole procedure. The whole procedure is that we start only with the input is the Hamiltonian and the output is the conformal data, or in the presence of supersymmetry, the superconformal data, if you want. And the conformal data comprised of three things. So scaling dimension conformal things and single charge and the OP coefficient. So what will we proceed? So the first thing is we put it on a circle with certain boundary conditions to get these energy eigenstates. And this could be achieved by matrix product state, but presumably they are the method. And from the energy and the momentum, you can infer the scaling dimensions and the conformal spins. From the Fourier model of this Hamiltonian, you get Hn, and this Hn operator would help you identify which of this psi alpha is the real zero primary. And calculating this quantity will give you the central charge, one estimate of the central charge. Okay, so later we also want the central, the OP coefficient, and what we do is we starting with the energy eigenstate, and we use a variational method. We set an ansatz of this primary field and ask the low energy matrix element to match the CFT expectations. So this will give you the lattice primary operators. And from this lattice primary operators, and you can sandwich it between primary state and to get OP coefficient. In the presence of the supersymmetry, you need to select from the primary state TF and TF bar. They are always present in the superconformal field theory if you have superconformal symmetry. And this have unique feature that they are Carroll field with scaling dimension 3/2. And from this, you can Fourier transform it and get the super real zero generator. And by acting with the super real zero generators on the primary states, you get the super real zero primary state, which cannot be lowered by these operators. And you can get yet another estimation of the central charge by this expression, and you can check whether they are the same. If they are the same, then it is a strong hint that this is really a superconformal field theory. Okay, so that is it. So thanks.
Okay, let's thank both the speakers.